This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
Good morning to you, Misha.
Good morning.
Great to have you in the studio again.
Thank you. And on your donations drive, I mean, listening to that interview with Graham Ashton, I couldn't think of any better example of the importance of having a community media to hold somebody like Graham Ashton to account. I thought it was a terrific and important interview, and I was really glad also to hear that you'd invited him back in 4 weeks' time to continue to be accountable. That process seems, you know, really important to me. So I'm happy to join. In fact, on the way out, I will definitely join. And I'll also get, I saw in the foyer you guys have got some fantastic T-shirts.
Yes.
So I want to grab one of those as well.
There you go. Oh, sure. Fantastic. Oh, you can... We like that.
The editor of The Conversation's become a Joy groupie. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
So what's hot on your agenda today, Misha?
Well, I think one of the things I've been thinking about this week is looking back over the election campaign and looking at not just, you know, what we've learned about the policies and who we vote for, but looking at really what it tells us about how our democracy works or doesn't work. And one of the things I've sort of noticed is the ways in which different media outlets have failed us or have told the story perhaps not as well as they could have. It's very interesting when you think about television and you look at the way that politics is covered on television, you've really got sort of two major ways. There's sort of the TV news, which is very image-based, very tightly controlled by political operatives, not a lot of policy substance. And then there's sort of panel show opportunities, interviews, which can be quite combative, quite a bit of hot air. You look at the newspapers and there's a lot of sort of politics as theatre, a lot of calling of the horse race, the polls, who's going to win, who's doing what to who. I would argue that the media's coverage of the actual policy detail, although it is there in patches, is not perhaps as good as it could be. So you don't really get the information about what the competing policies are and what decisions you face. And after I leave here and finish signing up and buying my T-shirt, I'm going to go and do my voting. And one of the things I was thinking about was when I go to vote, do I really know in my head exactly what the differences are, for example, between, you know, the Greens and Labor and the Coalition on climate change policy or education or health? And the truth is, as a professional journalist, I follow all this material really closely, and I couldn't say necessarily I do. There is a lot of the detail of what's actually going on and what's actually being offered that sort of is lost in the way the story of politics is communicated. And I think that's sad. I think it's also sad when somebody like Scott Morrison, you know, who seems to have been, you know, according to all the pundits, quite successful as a campaigner, can succeed with a mode of presentation that, you know, in my view, is so lacking in actual substance. So it says a lot that our politics is played around things like how do you talk, how do you come across on television. But if you look at the actual policy agenda, or if you take even a minute to look at it,
it's very light.
It's very,
very, very light.
And I think, Misha, you know, I spoke earlier about Bob Hawke and, you know, his passing on and the legacy that he leaves, you know, authentic, but you could never be in any doubt when you watched Bob being interviewed by a journalist, one, that he was engaged... But that more often than not, he did give an answer, and he was across the detail. And it seems, yeah, I know what you say. Like I've watched a lot of television and listened to radio during this campaign, and if I was an uninformed voter, you know, I'd be really struggling to find out what the basis of some of these policies are, because the politicians, and I'm not blaming necessarily some of the journalists in this, because sometimes a politician gets asked a question three or four times and eventually you just get tired of asking it. But it's almost though, no, we can't tell you. Because we either don't know the detail or we're not going to share it with you because, you know, it might upset you.
Yeah, and I think what happens then is it becomes a contest about personalities and the way that people present, but you lose, you know, that substance. One of the interesting things about Bob Hawke, Barry Cassidy wrote a great article about Bob Hawke, and he talked about the fact that Bob Hawke was so strong in his sort of anti-racist stance.
Yes.
But he also talked about when Bob Hawke discovered something, I forget what the policy issue area was, but somebody said, well, you can't say that. The Australian people, you know, won't agree with you on that. And he said, well, tell me how I changed their minds.
Yes.
And that's a really interesting example of leadership, because everybody says that Bob Hawke had this unique relationship with Australian voters, which I think is true. But it was a relationship in which he was prepared to actually assert a point of difference and have a discussion with voters about changing ideas. And it feels like that's not so much what we're getting sort of in our current political dialogue.
I think you're absolutely right. I've actually found this election more than any other election campaign incredibly frustrating because the depth of information that's been available has not been there. So each time I hear Labor announce something, I go straight to the website, check out their policy documents, and usually I can find something, not always, but usually I can find a policy document or a media statement, usually both. With the Greens, similar experience. That's not been the case with a coalition. Sometimes it's just a media statement, sometimes it's just a media conference, and not even a document beyond that.
Yeah, and it's one of the hard jobs for journalists. We actually published a panel, I think, on Friday that tried to pull together all of the... All of the work on biodiversity. And in the end, we took it down. And the reason was that for some of the areas that we're looking at, the parties were coming back to us and saying, well, it's not here, but it's here. Well, we've said some comment in, you know, at this point. It's actually very difficult to pull together something that's comprehensive, that really details what all the policies are, and sort of do that in a way that's sort of balanced and fair and captures everything, because the information is so scattered around.
Misha, just taking the conversation forward a little bit, I'm particularly interested in whether you can influence voters' views and opinions, and can the media actually effectively do that, and what might be some of the tactics and instruments.
Yeah, how do you do it?
Well, I think the first point is that it's not the job of the media to influence people's opinions. It's not sort of an advocacy
role. Give it a pretty hard go.
Have you told News Corp's that?
Well, I mean, I think that example of the front page of the Daily Telegraph having a go at Bill Shorten's comments about his mother, and generally the way in which those newspapers have campaign for one side of politics, I think is very bad for journalism in this country. I think, and to me, it's not just that it represents a political view, although I do think the job of the media should be to inform, not to advocate for one side or the other. It's actually the way in which it's done, which is all about politics as theatre. So the interesting things for them, it's almost playing it like a reality TV contest. They want somebody to betray somebody or to look bad or be caught out in a fib. It's got to be a gotcha. And the reality is the News Limited tabloids or News Corp tabloids, for a long time, have had this modus operandi where, like the producers of a reality TV show, if people don't create enough drama, they just find a way to create it themselves.
Yes.
And what you do then is you get this sort of sideshow mentality, which is all about sort of pandering to this idea that you can really make a good decision based on, oh, I trust that one, or I don't like that one, or that one was shady, which... when you have compulsory voting is important, because if you can move perceptions on that level, you can actually move votes. I would argue it's not as, you know, good for democracy, because what you want is ideally to provide people the opportunity to make rational decisions based on the evidence.
I mean, with News Corps, it's a bit like a circus. You see the clown, but never the ringmaster. The ringmaster's Rupert Murdoch. Now... You know, and the editors that he appoints, and that, you know, they don't do anything as blunt as direct a journalist. But the journalist understands, and that they will. You know,
is that a comment or a question, maker?
Both. But no, I mean, I'm interested, Misha. You know, you've worked for Fairfax in the past, and you know, do you think a newspaper editorial actually has any impact? You know, when, you know, The Age comes out and basically says you should vote for Shorten, and the Sydney Morning Herald says that, the Murdoch, almost without exception, said you should vote for the coalition. Do you think that has any impact, or is it the actual stories that have preceded that are more likely to impact how someone votes?
I think the editorials have almost zero impact.
Yeah.
It's important within the publication, and I can see why journalists feel that it's a good thing to do, given that they, you know, do all of this coverage about different arguments on policy areas. The idea of actually then looking at those arguments, weighing them and saying, OK, this is what we think on balance is the more compelling argument. There is some benefit for that. I also think that it might be a mistake in Australia. There are different systems in different countries, and not all countries do newspapers do editorials where they put out a particular position. But you're absolutely right. The key thing is that the attitudes and views really are played out much more in the way things are covered through the campaign. Mm. And that's where most of the manipulation goes on. And it's got to do with things like story selection, the way stories are presented, the way images are presented, what's not covered as much as what is covered.
We've just... Adrian...
From Paran.
From Paran, a new member, says, thank you, Adrian, great programming, love to listen, and that included a $1,000
donation.
That's terrific.
That'll keep
thank you,
up.
Adrian. Love your work.
So, Misha, you know, in terms of, you know, I've looked at the coverage extensively through the campaign of what you guys have done, and it's been one of the first places I go to actually try and ascertain, well, what was that about? What was that announcement about? You know, to try and get some detail. Do you think, you know, that the huge number of people that have pre-polled, as well as postal, we're probably looking at, with pre-poll and postal, probably a third of the electorate, has already put pencil to paper and decided. Why do you think those numbers are so high?
To be honest, I don't know. I think one reason is the Electoral Commission has been not particularly vigorous in policing the fact that you're supposed to have an excuse to pre-poll.
Well, a few million people are all either not going to be in the electorate.
What do you mean? It's a quarter of or a third of the voting population, Macca, are on leave or can't vote
today.
Well,
they're not in their electorate. Well, this is good. You know, this is. I think someone on somewhere said this is good for tourism. There's got to be a few million people that aren't going to be home on that day, so they're going to be somewhere else.
Yeah. Look, the numbers are very high, and there have been a lot of concerns expressed about, in particular, what it means democratically for smaller parties because of the resource implications of actually dealing with all those pre-polling booths and dealing with that whole process. The other thing that people have expressed some concern about, which is the fact that people are voting before all the announcements are out, before the campaign has completed. I'm actually slightly less concerned about that because I feel like the substance of the policy positions, the details, so much of it is out, you know, so early. I think that people that do want to make up their minds based on the evidence, I'm not convinced that they're being deprived of that opportunity by missing the last few weeks.
I heard about an event yesterday that took place which was a commitment or recommitment to an announcement that had been made a couple of weeks prior to that. So to me it sounded a bit like a media stunt designed to really create another opportunity to get to media, but there was no new message, no new story.
Yeah, and that's really the last week. That's sort of how it plays out at the end.
We're actually pretty much out of time, Misha. Sorry about that. Thank you. I know when you leave the studio, you're going to join up and you're going to buy a Joy t-shirt. And, you know, I'm sure like all of us, we'll be following the results pretty closely tonight. And I'm sure next week there'll be a lot of analysis of the election by you guys.
Fantastic. Have a great election night.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.